Welcome to Context with Advanced Design. Context is a podcast where laid-back conversations on design, life, and everything in between happen. In this show, we interview experts in our field, but also students, educators, and anyone who's a part of the industrial design family. Thank you for tuning in. For today's episode, we welcome Angela Sevilla and Dustin Lee of Los Objects. With roots in Mexico and the United States, an idea to combine these two identities was born from the need to express ourselves and our point of view through functional objects that we share everyday life with. Los Objects is a brand dedicated to the exploration of ideas through physical products. They are a team of two individuals with different backgrounds, but one of the things they have in common is their background as industrial designers. At Los Objects, they approach every product using the design process. They become curious about a topic, research it, brainstorm and sketch ideas, prototype it, iterate, test, and make the final object that you get to experience. Their priority is to be curious, to experiment, and to create moments that make our everyday life a little more beautiful. Los Objects was founded by Angela Sevilla, footwear, material, and color designer at Nike, and Dustin Lee, UX designer at Collective Plus. Thank you so much, Angela and Dustin, for being here. Let's get started.
Dustin and Angela, it's a pleasure to have both of you here. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks a lot, Hector.
Yeah, thanks appreciate for it. Having us.
Yeah, we're really excited to have you guys on here because this is the first time. Well, maybe not the first time. We've had a couple of other designers, like couples, right? So, but this is probably the first time where we actually have like a duo who comes on here. And both of you are doing Los Objects together. And that's awesome. I have so many questions for you. We can kick things off by just diving into your time at CCA, because one thing that I'm very interested about that is both of you went to CCA. The school is situated in one of the most competitive design markets in the world. So as students, that must have been really exciting. Or maybe you didn't know this, right? A lot of students are pretty naive, like myself. I was like, oh, okay, whatever. And then don't realize it until much later. But tell us about your experience at CCA. Both of you have, you know, separate experiences. For example, like I just talked about how Angela found out about CMF, and then you kind of went down this UX route. So we'd love to hear your stories and we can kind of open it from there.
Yeah, I guess. So I like how I found CCA was just through a Google search, and I basically went through the whole list. It was like Art Center, RCA, Rhode Island, like all of these, I would say like very prestigious art schools. And I decided to go to San Francisco to check it out. They had an open house. I went with my mom. I was living in Tucson at the time. So we both flew over there to San Francisco. And I remember like walking into the nave, which is like the main area of CCA where all of the presentations happen. And it was just like so active. There was so much stuff going on. Everyone was so friendly. I didn't experience any like very like pretentious attitudes or anything like that. It was super welcoming. So that to me really made me fall in love with the school, and also seeing the shop upstairs that they have, like the CNC router and how everything is set up with glass that you can see what students are working on. That to me was super welcoming, that everything was transparent for everyone to see and get excited about, even if that wasn't your major. And then being a student there, I love that my professors, almost the majority, I would say like 98% were people working in the industry. They had like immediate insights of what was happening outside of school and the world of design. Like when AR started becoming a huge thing, they will like bring it up in class, talk about apps when like industrial design started moving more into UX. And I always felt like it was a very stimulating environment. Our class in particular was super collaborative, so we were always critiquing each other, and that's an environment that I've never experienced. where everyone was so generous with their knowledge. That was my summary of CCA.
That's awesome. Yep.
So my experience is a little bit different. As I'm listening to Angela talk, I'm like, you did so much more research than I did. Basically what I did was, I actually got into industrial design because I was in Korea teaching English, and I was drawing a lot every day, and I was like, what should I do with this? I saw two guys that I had mutual friends with, the Creative Session guys, and they had been posting like renderings, but I, you know, not knowing what industrial design even was, I just thought they were real objects. So I hit them up on Instagram or whatever was around that time, and I asked them, you know, what do you guys do? And Wang, he told me that he did industrial design and this thing where you get to draw and make cool stuff. So that's the basics of like what I understood. And I found out that they went to CCA. And so literally I just applied there. That was the only school I even applied to. And I had never even visited before. I didn't know anything about their philosophy. Didn't know what they looked like. And funny thing is, when I first went the first day, I went to the Oakland campus. There were two campuses. I think there might still be two campuses at this time. But at that time, we went to the Oakland campus. And I went to a university first. So I went to University of Washington initially. And I was used to like this school that has a mile radius. Mm-hmm. So I go to this art school. And it's literally like a couple houses, it looks like. So honestly, my initial impression of it was pretty underwhelming. But as I, you know, started school and as I started taking classes and interacting with the teachers, like Angela said, it was like, well, one thing, I'm used to like 100 to 500 people classes. And this was like 15 people per class. So the attention from the professors was completely different. And the philosophy of like being user-centric and that whole thing that came from IDEO, like that really, really influenced how I thought about design, because that just blew my mind the first time I heard about it. So it's like these principles, the professors, the class involvement, and honestly, the students themselves, you know, like my fellow students, they all really, really, really like impacted me in a great way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. You went from a very traditional academic setting into a very intimate art and design setting.
Yeah. Absolutely. And it was like, it's like two different experiences, you know, like, with the university, you're going to class and they're lecturing to you, and you just take notes and take tests. Yep. And I never went to the industrial design program, so I can't speak to their program up there. But in CCA, it was completely opposite. It was like we were interacting with the teacher every day. They were giving us feedback. We were doing class discussions, you know? So a world of difference. Yeah. Once I went to CCA, I was like, this is how classes should be taught. Like, it should be interactive. You should be learning actively, not just passively sitting back, listening to some speaker on the stage. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. No, that's fantastic. And like you both said, two different perspectives. Very interesting. You know, Angela, you kind of got into CMF because of CCA. And then, Dustin, how did you end up in the UX space now? You know, I'm sure there's a big gap there, but if you guys want to share those stories.
Yeah. So actually, I had heard about this thing called interaction design at CCA. Mm-hmm. And so I was about 2 years into the industrial design program, starting my third year. And I took a class with a guy named Håkon Faste, was incredible professor at CCA, one of the lead professors at CCA in the interaction design program. And I took his class. And at that point, I'd already switched careers And then halfway through my second degree, I found this thing that I really resonated with, but I thought it was a little too late to switch. And I didn't want to spend another 2 years, you know, at CCA, because while the CCA education is great, it's also very expensive. So I got interested in it, and I started asking questions about it, and that class sparked some thoughts in me. And throughout the next 2 years, I, you know, talked to people in that class. I got to know people, and I really just got interested in that way of thinking, like talking about research strategy, high level thinking. So I started applying it in my own way to my projects from that point on. And, you know, once I graduated, I just decided I was going to go into industrial design, but I tried to, you know, do things at work that would get me into the UX field. And actually, the reason I got into UX officially was because I worked with this guy at a previous consultancy, and I mentioned to him in like a conversation, really passing by conversation, that I was interested in UX design. We didn't talk about it anymore after that. And about a year later, we talked, and he said that he had changed companies and he had a position open for a UX designer. And he asked me if I was interested in it. So I said, yeah. And that's how I really got my official start.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, were you scared?
Yeah. Well, you know, I told him, you know, I don't have official experience right. in UX design. So I communicated pretty clearly, like, you know, I don't know what I'm doing. So you're going to have to do a lot of work on the front mm-hmm. end. But yeah, he took a chance on me, and that job really, really, it taught me a lot. It threw me down in the trenches. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Yep. Like, it was just immediate first day, boom, you have projects, mm-hmm. wireframes, building visual designs, you know, like the whole thing. It was cool because I went through every single part of that process. So I went through the beginning, you know, research phase, the wireframing phase, the visual design phase, and, you know, all the stuff that comes with that, the user testing and all that. So yeah, I mean, it was a great experience, but yes, to answer your question, I was scared.
Yeah. Yeah. This is the best way to learn though.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
And, I think so. CCA, the way it is structured, is like a Bauhaus style of, mm-hmm. You know, curriculum, where you start with like your fundamentals, where you learn about color and all that. And as you progress to your major, you start learning one skill at a time. Mm. So like second year, you start learning research, design research. So learning about your user, what questions to ask, how to ask these questions, and then apply that to your design. Your design class, your studio class. And then as you go towards your third year, you start learning more about aesthetics and really exploring like what kind of designer mm-hmm. you want to be and so on. And I think that each year, I feel like each one of us, of our classmates and friends, you started shining at like a thing, and you could see like, oh, this person is really good at this. And mm-hmm. I feel like from the my perspective of how Dustin moved into UX, like I remember when you were in design research class, you like really thrived in that. And I feel like you started really loving design in that process. Yeah. And I think for me, on the other hand, when we were in what is called Industrial Design 3, it's like the main aesthetics class that you take at CCA. That class was heavy on like really look at the form, look at the materials and all of that. And that was my first introduction to what CMF was. These two professors that I had, Robin Hubbard, I think it's how you pronounce his last name. He's a co-founder of Level now. Mm-hmm. And Hannes Harms, he works at Industrial Design Google. Both super talented designers. And they really taught us to look at the shell of the product, like really look at the fillets, look at the parting lines, all of that. And one of the critiques they brought, actually two times, they brought two different CMF designers to give us critique. And I was blown away that someone could be so focused on something. And to me, that was incredible, because how I like to describe CMF to someone that has no context about design is almost like your first impression of a product. Mm-hmm. So if you walk into something like an Apple store, and now that they have all these different colors and finishes and all of their products, you're, without even thinking about it, you're going to gravitate towards the color that you love. And then you start, you grab the iPhone, and let's say, for example, I love the yellow iPhone. So you grab it and you start looking around, you start looking at the details and the monochromatic of all the product. And to me, that was amazing. And in order for us to go forward to our thesis year, you have to have an internship either already finished or you are like enrolled in one. And when we were in the process of looking for internships, one of our friends, he got an internship at Fitbit for ID. And he told me, hey, they have this thing, CMF design intern. I don't know if you're, if you want to try it out. So I applied, I got on a call with the recruiter, and she explained to me what a CMF intern would do. And I was like, that sounds amazing. So my official, like, working introduction was through the Fitbit team. And I got to learn about trend research and looking at human behavior and translating that into colors and palettes. And that was just amazing. I remember going back home after every day of that internship and like laying down on my bed and being like, wow, this is amazing. I felt like it was the best career ever. Mm-hmm. And then we went back to CCA and we had our final studio class before we focused only on thesis. And that class, I had two professors that they were so encouraging on like finding the potential of the student. And then really like telling you like, yo, go for it. And I remember we didn't have Pantone books at school. So what I did was I went to the Pantone website. I screenshotted each Pantone color that I wanted to start building my color palette from. I printed them out in like the nice paper that I printed at school. I cut them into like the little square so that they look like some chips. And I remember in one of our critiques, I arrived with like a full-on like color exploration. And I remember my teacher, Fanon Bagley, she told me, yes, like do all of them. Because usually you pick one color, right? And everyone goes for like matte black or like soft touch black or whatever. As designers, like that's our, we want to go towards the black product because it looks so chic and everything. Yeah. And she's like, why don't you do like one of each? Just give us color exploration. Give us all of this. And the other teacher was Terrence Kwan, which also amazing designer, amazing mentor. And they really told me like, you know, if you find a skill on this, why not hone into it and really work towards that? So after graduating, I knew that I wanted to lean more into CMF and explore that. And I found that that was my forte. That was the best skill that I had in design.
That sounds amazing. Did you work with Kelly at Fitbit?
Yes, Kelly Roche. Yeah, she was my mentor as an intern. And then she's the reason why I went back to Fitbit, because we kept awesome. In touch. Mm-hmm. She's amazing. She even went to my senior thesis presentation. She's like, so she's the sweetest person. She's super generous too with knowledge. And I got to work with her again when I went back for the full-time position.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, we both went to the same school, except that I'm a couple years older than she is. But nice. Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, obviously we know that this community is really small, so yeah. Everyone kind of knows each other. But now you're at Nike, right? Which is like this huge, okay, it's a really big deal because everyone wants to work at Nike. How did you get there, right?
Oh my gosh. I would say this process started since 2016, like I remember. So like I said, at CCA, in order to progress to your next year, you need an internship. And Tony Cross, I think that's his name, he's a CCA alumni. He's a Nike employee. I don't personally know him, but I know that he was like a huge big deal at CCA, I remember, because he was an industrial designer, but really focused on materials. Like he mm-hmm. will go into the fashion studios and like look at fabrics and stuff, which is as students, you rarely do that. Mm-hmm. And he was really curious around that. And he has kept a thread of bringing a recruiter from Nike to CCA to look at students that might be into footwear style design and so on. So CCA chose a few of us that had projects that were either like materials related or that could translate into footwear. So I had my first, I would say, Nike interview for an internship, the 2016 summer internships there. And that's how I met the recruiter, Andy, and always kept in touch with him, like here and there. Didn't get that internship, but I knew that eventually I was going to apply again. Maybe I needed, you know, more projects and so on. And then, so fast forward, I was at Fitbit for like a year and a half. And then we decided to relocate here. Dustin is from here originally. And we both knew like, well, the best thing for CMF would be the footwear industry, right? And Portland is like the hub of footwear. So we moved here. I had like no internships lined up or anything, but we had some mutual friends that had either worked at Nike or are right now working there. So I talked to them. I asked them like, hey, what can I do? They put me in contact with some recruiters, and that's how I began my conversation. And towards the end of 2019, I got another interview with a recruiter. That was pretty funny. So I was in the midst of redesigning my thesis, like redoing my whole portfolio. You know, as designers, every time you're gonna apply to a job, you're like, I need to redefine my whole soul. So I was doing that, and I barely finished my portfolio, sent it to the recruiter, and she told me, it's not there yet. Like, you need to work on it. You need to add more projects. And that's when I started adding my ceramic stuff, because at the time I was unemployed, I was just focusing on my skill as a ceramicist. So I added that, and that I think that added like a broader sense of who I am and how I apply design thinking to something that you might not think is design per se. So then I got an interview. I started interviewing with them, and I was super close to getting the job, but the pandemic hit. Like literally the day of my final interview, everything started closing down. And so they told me, hey, we're like closing down hiring. We don't know we're gonna open up, but keep in touch. So that's what I did. I kept in touch with the recruiter. I kept in touch with the managers that I interviewed with through like LinkedIn or email. And I just kept, you know, being consistent, like really letting them know that I was here, I was ready for the challenge, and I was interested in what they had to do, what they were doing. And then early this year, I again got a call from a recruiter and then started the process again of applying, and yeah, landed the job. Like I just finished my second week, so it's like super fresh.
Wow.
It just started. Yeah.
Why is it so hard to work at a big company like Nike? Like, it sounds like you talked to a lot of recruiters. Why? Yeah. I mean, was it easier to talk to the designers there? Can they get you? No, it has to be done through recruitment.
Yes, that's the thing. Like, a designer can recommend you and put your portfolio like in the system or something like that.
Yeah.
But it's never up to them to make the choice. It's gotcha. Always up to the recruiter. I'm not sure, because if it is like, we don't want to make any favors, or I'm not sure, to be honest. Gotcha.
That makes sense.
But yeah, I mean, I know that they're super picky, because they know that there's a lot of talent out there and they want to get what's best for that team that you're applying to, because it's so niche. Like each department that you apply to does like super specific stuff. So Yeah, I'm sure they know what they're doing on the recruiter front.
That makes sense. Now, we're still in a pandemic, and I'm assuming both of you are based in Portland right now, working from home. What is life like? What was that look like? Being inside and then doing both of your jobs. Both of you are designers, right? I think whenever I see a couple, both of them being in design, immediately I'm like, oh, those two are unicorns, because I think that's a little rare, right? Like, I think, like, for me personally, I like to shut off design around 6 or 7 p.m. and I no longer want to talk about it. I'm sure my girlfriend doesn't want to hear me vent or want to hear me, like, you know, and for some of us, design is 24/7, right? Because it's just like, it's not that we're passionate, but it's so integrated in everything that we do, everything that we buy. Like, you go to like Target and you can buy like the generic Target hand sanitizer, but because we're designers, we're like, oh, like, the bottle has to, bottle has to look beautiful, or it has to be like, God, has to be method or whatever, right? But
yeah, shout out some method.
it can get pretty sick, right? Like, after listening to our. So I'd love to hear, like, what is that relationship like?
You want to start?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because, you know, we have friends that are in relationships with other designers, and then we have friends that are in relationships with non-designers. And I find that the relationships with non-designers, I think they have a hard time communicating that design is like this 24/7 thing. Mm. Like, I don't know if you have that similar thing, but like with me and Angela, she knows how, you know, design life, right? Like, hashtag design life. Like, she knows what that's like. She knows that you're gonna be working until like late at night, like 11, 12 p.m. or 12 a.m. So there's not a dispute in that way. You know what I mean? So she understands what I'm trying to do. I understand that she's gonna spend time doing what she's doing. And there's just that. I think that's a good thing. I think that's the pro side of it for sure.
Yep.
Yeah, go ahead. I was gonna say, like, the con side, I think, is the same as what you're saying. It's that you really never turn it off. You know, like, you're in line at Target and you're like, they can make this line like work this way, you know, why are they doing this other way?
You start questioning we start questioning people's life's work.
Yeah. exactly. Yeah. So yeah, but I find that regardless of whether I was in a relationship with Angela or not, I would be that way anyways. I would just be looking at things 24/7, because that's just you want to be inspired at all times, and you also want to be critiquing things at all times, because it's just natural to you, you know, natural to your job and who you are. So I don't think that part is exacerbated with being in a relationship with another designer.
Absolutely.
I think that, so the beauty of it is that you're always inspiring each other. We, like, the way that we approach design, I feel like it's kind of opposites, but in the same spectrum. Like, if you had to do styles of design or what you're interested in, I think we're in the same bucket, but how we approach it is really different. So we're constantly, like, inspiring each other or telling each other tips on how to do that better. I think that it gets hard when you personally are like having a mental breakdown and then the other person is talking to you about like a very specific detail. You're like, I'm going insane in my own mind. Stop, you know? But I think that's when, you know, as a couple, you have to put restraints. So for us was giving a day of the week where we completely have a break from work and just enjoy the day. But the funny thing is that sometimes enjoying the day is like, let's go to the hay store and look at things and like get inspired for the week that comes next. So or like, true. Let's go out with a disposable camera and take pictures of like the colors to see color palettes or whatever. So our fun also ends up being design as well, which is pretty dorky. But Yeah, I mean, like, everything we see, we start analyzing it like a movie or a TV show. And the fun thing is that because we have that design thinking way of like having conversations, we end up analyzing everything. And sometimes it's fun. I mean, most of the time it's fun. And sometimes you're like, okay, let's stop. And sometimes both of us look at each other and we're like, okay, let's take a break from that heavy discussion.
Yeah, I can totally relate. You know, my girlfriend's like, let's go for like a romantic walk. And I'm like, no, we're going to like the Apple store or something.
let's go on a walk and end up there.
Yeah, let's go to Hay, like you said. But no, I think like, so my girlfriend is a nurse, right? And I think I've been with her for quite some time now. And the one thing that I have noticed is a lot of the things that I, like you said, design for me is 24/7. And I don't apologize for that at all, but it definitely rubs off on her, like the aesthetic, like specifically things that I'm attracted to and I'm looking at. Right now we're in the process of moving, and so we're purchasing some pretty big furniture items. And so like moving is all strategy, right? Especially when you're buying new furniture, you're like, okay, you know, especially as a designer. And I can see it in her, like, oh, like let's look at this company. And I'm like, dang, like, okay, like, like, you, like, that's good. Like, you know, like, I'm very impressed that she has that eye that I'm looking for. And it makes things a lot easier for both of us. So, no, that's fantastic. Yeah.
Another question is, does she rub off on you in any way with her nursing stuff?
Yeah. You know what? Kind of, yeah. I mean, in graduate school, I did my whole graduate thesis was around medical, the medical industry. And so actually, like, in that sense, she was like a huge educational resource for me, because she was like there. Like, she was like on call for me. That sounds awful, but like, I needed something, you know, I'm like, you know. And then with this whole COVID stuff that happened, which the beginning of around this time last year, you know, scared the shit out of everyone because we didn't know what it was. My comfort zone was just talking to her and then her just reassuring that things were going to be okay because she's in the medical industry and she's getting this information from her job. You know, she was able to be like, okay, like, I think our human, like our bodies are, you know, you sneeze or you start having a headache and you're like, oh my God, is it COVID? Right. Like you just start, you start going crazy. Yeah. So for her, she's very like a very logical person. Yeah. So she's like, okay, chill out. Like, it's okay. Right. So, I think it's definitely like a symbiotic relationship where I do definitely like, I get a lot of that from her. So
yeah. Beautiful.
It's interesting. I think if you're listening out there and you are a designer who, you know, like just I think it's just always good to have this relationship that works for both parties, right? And that's awesome. Let's shift things into Lowe's Objects. First and foremost, I love that name because it's a little bit of both worlds, right? You know, I'm looking at your website and here on your website, it says thoughtfully design objects that make the everyday a little more beautiful, made in Portland and Culiacan, which is an awesome city just outside of Mexico City. Would love to hear what is Los Objects for those who don't know who it is. And then what is kind of your vision for it?
Yeah. Well, a little bit of the background of how Los Objects came about, like you said, it's a little bit of both worlds. So I grew up in Mexico, moved to the United States at the age of 18, with the goal of going to college in the United States. So I was born in Arizona. So I had that privilege of having the U.S. citizenship so that I could get not like an international rate on the you know, the tuition and stuff. And so I, like, all of my roots are in Mexico still, but my design eye, it's heavily influenced by the, you know, American culture and also the way that CCA taught us how to design. And as I grew older, I started like combining the two. And like you said at the beginning with our intros, I've always been interested in tableware. Like I knew that no matter where I worked, if it now is in footwear or before it was on wearables, I wanted to end up somewhere within like the houseware section of design. And so we were talking about it. And when we decided to move to Portland, we talked about it, and Dustin suggested like, why don't you just focus on ceramics for a while and just go through your love of that and see where it goes. And then through our talks, like that's the one thing that as a couple of both designers, we're constantly like coming up with ideas. And through the talks of what could this be or what could this project be? Because it started just as like a personal project. We came up with the name Los Objects because I wanted something that could grow outside of, right now it's ceramics, but it can grow to glassware, it can grow to furniture, it can grow to anything, analog sort of objects for now. And that's how the name came about. And I wanted to get inspired by the way that I used to, like I saw design happen in Mexico. Industrial design in Mexico, it's, and I think most of Latin America, it's very craft-based still. There's a lot of like boutique design where it's one-of-a-kind objects. You constantly work with the makers of different cities and you get to learn from their process. And sometimes your pieces end up being not mass production quality, but they're beautiful things. And one of the very famous Mexican architects, Luis Barragan, by the, like if nobody has heard of him, he's the one that came up with like the, what they call like the Mexican pink now, you know, like the facades and stuff. He's the one that came up with those color palettes and those facades.
Yep.
And he would always say that a perfect object has no soul. Like the soul is there when it's not completely made to perfection. And that describes a lot of Mexico. Like things are made beautifully, but something doesn't quite work, or maybe like it's wobbly, but they leave it like that. And it has soul and it has all these things. And as a designer, you're constantly going towards the perfection. And the thing with ceramics is that it rarely lets you be perfect. Like the material is constantly teaching you. So yeah, it started as a personal exploration of just learning the skills and whatnot. And it eventually, I think, organically grew into a company. Then Dustin and I started working together and we saw potential on bringing our own design eye into this world of craft and adding small details. Like one of our planters is slightly lifted off the surface and it has that floating effect. And an idea I remember when teachers told us how the MacBook is designed, like the feet of the MacBook are put in a certain position so that you never see them when the computer is sitting on your desk, so that it looks like it's floating. It's never touching your table. So it's like this magic that happens. So like little design details like that, we want to bring into the ceramics world, into the houseware world, and yeah, inspire people. Because as designers, we buy things like a pair of scissors that are beautiful to us. But like you said, the soap bottle. And there's small moments in your life where you go and wash your hands and you look at this beautiful bottle and you look at it every day that you start fully understanding this object.
Mm-hmm.
You're not making it every day. You're just looking at it and you understand these details, and that inspires you as a designer how to use those details in another thing. And that's, I think, like our overall goal with Los Objects.
Yeah, you have different things here on your website. You have planters, you have pitchers, you have a couple of vases.
Mm-hmm.
How do you guys, I mean, they all have different names also, and I'd love to hear what is the story behind these names.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the The process is, I think a lot of industrial design and design in general is working backwards to tell a story. So we developed the products first, and then we added the story afterwards.
Well, it was like back and forth. I would say like our first design was the Isla base, the one that has the fold.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that one, we came up with the design like early 2020. And that came from an exploration of how to make this really hard material seem soft. Because the beauty of working with clay is that it's so fluid. It's like this liquefied thing. And once it's fired, it's like literally a rock. So how can you still leave that sense of fluidity in a final form? And that's where that form came about. And then as we developed the rest of the line, there's some pieces like the Joshua planter that was, I don't know if you want to tell the story.
Yeah, so of that one. We took a trip to Joshua Tree a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. and it was in the dead of summer, so extremely hot. Like we saw one or two people out there. But if you've ever been to Joshua Tree, you'll know one is it's Joshua trees everywhere. So that's why it gets the name. But the reason that it's so famous, I think, is because it's so trippy. And one of the things that adds to the trippiness of Joshua Tree is the giant rock formations that look like, at least from our observations, what we thought it looked like. It looked like they were melting into each other. Mm. So it was like giant rock formations that looked soft and worn down, but it was in the middle of desert. So there's nothing really to wear it down in terms of like water. So we thought that was amazing. And the way that the rocks sit on top of each other, it just looked like they were soft and they were melting into each other. Mm-hmm. So when we were making that planter, we designed the top part first. And as we went, you know, it started with like this kind of pillow, soft, circular form. And we decided, or we learned that we needed a dish. And so we already used like the invisible dish that Angela was talking about on another planter. So we wanted to do something a little bit different with this one. And so the idea here was inspired by the Joshua Tree rocks, making something that looks like it's squished. So mm-hmm. putting a little plate underneath that extends to the same width of the rest of the planter, and then kind of squishing it down to create that effect. Yeah. So that's where the name comes from. But I think all of the names of the products are inspired by something around the earth, something in nature, something that is iconic in that culture, essentially. So the Shilin vase, for example, is our tallest vase. And it's inspired by the Shilin, they call it
in China.
Yeah. So it's a park in China full of rock formations. And it's like tall rock formations that look like trees. So really they call
skinny.
It the, yeah. So they look. They call it the tree, the stone forest, or something like that. Mm-hmm. But that area is called Shilin. So we named it Shilin based off that. You know. So each product in our line is named after something on Earth, which is why it's called From the Soil. Yeah. The whole collection is called From the Soil because it's speaking to the clay mm-hmm. that comes from the soil, from the name, the concepts that come from the soil. Yeah.
And I think to add to that, if you look up pictures of what the name is, what the products are named after, for example, the Atacama picture, Atacama is a desert in Chile, a park in Chile, and they have some rock formations that are also skinny, but they're like kind of like tilted several directions. And that picture has this slight tilt. That it's, I think, like the biggest design like feature of the picture. All of them have this really small feature that resembles the place that they're named after. But again, like going to the Joshua example, the innovation there is that, at least from our research, we've never seen a plate of a planter being shaped, having like a intentional shape. It's always just a plate that is put underneath the planter. Mm-hmm. And to me as a designer, like they're made beautifully, but you just killed the form. It's like, you know that your planter is going to have a plate and you don't design that. You don't complete it. So it's as if you designed a beautiful bottle for your soap, and then you put an off-the-shelf pump that looks hideous, and you just ruined the whole form. So for us, as designers, that's what we're bringing into the craft space, is finishing the thought, is putting intention into each part of your product.
Yeah. And that kind of speaks to, you know, how getting inspiration from things unrelated to your design product can inspire something that's interesting and new, right? Like using Joshua Tree, these rock formations that we see on the trip, and applying them to a design and making it unique because of that. Yeah, that's why we do that.
And this is why design is 24/7, because you don't know where you go, you're going to find inspiration.
Absolutely.
This is all amazing. I love the stories behind every name, and dude, I'm looking at the Cenote Planter here on your website, and it says that it's named after the water caves in the Yucatan Peninsula of Mexico. The soft shape is designed to enclose and shine a light on a plant of your choosing, as well as appears as it were floating by the smaller diameter plate. This is all just very unique. This is amazing. And for those who are listening, again, we will share these links so that you can then also go to this website and just be inspired by a lot of this beautiful craft. Thank you so much for sharing this. You know, and as I'm kind of going through your website again, because you two have this background of being industrial designers, I'm curious to know, when you're coming up with an idea, do you go back to your industrial design roots, like research, sketching, prototyping, before you dive into actually making them?
Yes. I think that when we first started working together with Los Objects, Dustin brought a great point. So a little bit of backstory. I was having trouble focusing on what I wanted to make because there are so many endless possibilities. And he reminded me that in school, they give you a topic and it's very niche and you have to explore within that really niche topic. So one of his ideas was like, what if we interview a friend and ask them, like, what would you want to make, to be made specifically for you, for something that you do, and design for that. That's our user, that's our research, and then he's our client, basically. So one of our first collaborations was with our friend Drew, and he told us that he loves to drink mezcal. It's like a thing that he would like to do at the end of the day as a treat for himself. So we knew, like, from that perspective, it was something that was chill, you know, it wasn't like party mode, something that you want to sit down and enjoy and have this beautiful thing next to you. And we went through the ID process, sketching, prototyping with the actual clay. That's the beauty of clay, that when it dries, if you don't fire it, you just submerge it in water, use it again. So yeah, we went through that. And then of course, like the back and forth of like, we finished it. Oh no, what if we add something else? And you know, going through that whole process. And the beautiful thing is that we also manufacture it. So we literally get to see from the garage, our studio's in the garage. So we get to see it from there to the client, in this case, Drew, how the whole process went.
Yeah, definitely. I think with this, because Angela started with Los Objects, Angela started with the craft first. So I think the process is heavily influenced by the craft, right? I guess in a way that replaces the model making that we traditionally do. Mm-hmm. So we don't build foam models or, you know, build them out of clay, because she can literally just get on the wheel, turn it, and then we'll see the prototype there. So in that way, it's pretty awesome, because then we can see how it will turn out once the final thing is made. So I think that plays a lot into the process. You know, we go sketching, then we get into the making, prototype a few things, use that to test it with users, and then see if that works for them. For example, with this, with the Joshua Tree example, I said that we started with the top vessel first. that was without the user research. And then we went to confirm and we realized that, oh, we need a bottom plate because everyone is asking for this. So that influenced the design as well. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like all these things come together with the inspiration from Joshua Tree and then the user research. You know, it all comes together into this this object that really makes it unique.
Yeah, but we still make mood boards. Like we still we still make the mood board. We have foam cores on each one of our desks. I have some sketches pinned up from another project that we did, and we do like exactly the same because that's I find that anything that I do that I want to have this like refined outcome, in this case what Los Objects wants to do, if I don't follow the steps that I was taught to get to that beautiful outcome, I never quite get there. I always feel like there's something missing, and that's because it wasn't well-rounded, it wasn't well thought out. And I mean, as a potter, it's also beautiful to just wake up, put on your apron, get on the wheel and make something and let the clay like speak to you. That's what a lot of potters say, like just let the clay tell you what to do. And that's beautiful too. That's how the cenote, like the main part, came about. It was just me trying to apply like these giant fillets on the top and the bottom of the piece. Cause that's like, as a designer, as an industrial designer, fillets are like, you know, your the thing that you always want to achieve, the perfect fillet, right? Mm-hmm. So applying that, and then that form came about and I loved it. And then we said, what can we do with this form? And we designed around it. But I think that if you always follow the formula, you'll get to a beautiful product that is thought through. It has a function and it also decorates your space as well.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. And again, for those who are listening, link their social media and their website onto this episode. I know that we're 3 months into 2021. Things aren't going that great already, right? I thought 2021 was going to be awesome. What is, and we can wrap up this episode by with this question. What is something you look forward to, whether it's in your professional career or personal goals, or even with Los Objects? What is one thing that you're like, yeah, I'm excited about this?
Literally next week, we're going to Culiacan for a month, both of us, because we're showcasing like our second art exhibit, something that I've been working on since February of last year. We made a cup a day for each day of 2020. So we have 366 cups, each one with a date that goes for the day that it was made on. And yeah, it started as a project that was more about looking at routine. And 2020, we probably all forgot, but it was a leap year. So we had February 29th. And it was about highlighting that difference in that year. But it turned into a completely new project after the pandemic. So I really look forward to next month showing that in a local gallery, La Mina. Shout out to La Mina, they're awesome. Yeah, and we're gonna show that project that has literally been sitting in our garage for months, a year now, past a year. So that's one thing that I look forward to. And also with this new job at Nike, I look forward to just expanding my skills as a materials and color designer for sure.
That is amazing. Yeah, that's awesome. Congratulations, by the way. When you guys start promoting that, please let us know. We'd be more than happy to push that out as well. Sure. That's awesome. Congrats.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Of course. Dustin, what about you?
Yeah, for me, I think I'm going to miss I'm looking forward to the things that involve humans. So, I mean, this is great, like chatting via video is cool, but you know, just getting to hug people without feeling weird. That's what I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to playing pool at the bars again, because I missed that last year. I don't have a pool table. So
nice.
I'm definitely going to get back into that. And you know, just hit those balls around. It's something that's so meditative and so relaxing for me. So that to me, honestly, and then seeing what happens with all this, it's like a TV show right now, you know. I want to see the ending.
That's true. Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. That's awesome. We do a lot of this, right? Like, hey, what's up? And then you elbow people. And even people here in Chicago, like people that I work with on my team, like I see them once a month because we go and meet somewhere and I'm like, oh man, dude, I really want to hug you, dude. And it's just like, you know, yeah, it's interesting. I think.
Yeah. You start questioning people like based on their looks, like you look dirty today, bro.
Yeah. You're looking kind of pale today. Stay away. But yeah, that's awesome. I'm really happy for you guys. This sounds very exciting. Thank you so much for being on our context. And for those who are listening, I hope that this brought some insights on just step outside your comfort zone, you know, go beyond what you already do. You guys are doing that with Los Objects, and use your skills for other things, right? You just never know what you're going to do. And you guys started your own business and already going to have a gallery showing in Mexico. So that's exciting. But thank you so much. And we will see everyone at our next episode.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. See you guys next time.
Thank you for joining us today. Let's continue this conversation on our social media platforms. We're on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Discord. You can find us at Contacts with Advanced Design on Apple, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. Contacts is produced by Advanced Design with editing and production by Bitwell Benitez and music by Shy Day from Pixabay.